You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're right. You're right. I feel like everyone is kind of both right. I feel like you're right, but I'm right too. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics podcast. My name's Daniel.
I'm Carl Anker.
We do the podcast apparently just when we can do it. remember to follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get stuff. We're on Patreon. Check that out. If you're on Apple, there's a little subscription thing that you can hit. So do that. Some people signed up. So thank you, guys. All my time uploading that audio was made worth it. Carl, where can people find you before we get going?
You can find my writing over on The Athletic.
All right. It's a Champions League week. So Half Hope is somewhere probably preparing. He's probably, let me not say what I was about to say. He's wishing good luck for Kylian Mbappe, I'm sure. All right. So what happened this week that's worth discussing for 40 minutes?
Manchester United drew with Liverpool, throwing a spanner in the Premier League title race. The Champions League games between Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid and Manchester City have already happened. We're recording this 45 minutes before PSG and Barcelona kick off, 45 minutes before PSV and Dortmund kick off. I'll be honest with you right now, it's April and May, so my focus is honing in more and more in English football, more in the Premier League, more in the top half of the Championship. And I haven't had too much time to look on the goings on the La Liga, in Serie A, in the Bundesliga, although I'm talking to you right now, and if Bayer Leverkusen win this weekend, that's it. That's their title sealed up, and Leverkusen can be laid to rest. So, should we start with United Liverpool?
Do you know what? How about since this is going to be a podcast that's just short anyway, and there's no rules? Do you have household beef with PSV, or are your Dutch ties linked with PSV?
Household beef is with Feyenoord.
Oh, okay.
Ajax's biggest rivals are Feyenoord, so it's the Clásico is Ajax versus Feyenoord, which is a very, very good segue, because guess what happened on Sunday? Feyenoord beat Ajax 6-0.
I saw.
That is
the bad.
It's the biggest defeat in Ajax's history in the Eredivisie. There's a fantastic article by Jacob Whitehead on The Athletic called The Fall of the House of Ajax, and it outlines how Ajax have got to this point. Why their CEO might be at risk of going to prison for insider trading. The risk is, I thought the risk was huge, but now it might be minimal because, you know.
Just as an aside, don't forget that thought. How do you feel about the blank of the blank of blank as a title?
I love it.
You don't feel like it's too the and of-y? The blank it. Of the blank of blank.
I'm a big fan of the something of the something something. However, you know, this is my literary voice. One headline thing I really hate when things are described as something gate.
Yeah.
For instance, Watergate. Watergate is the name of a hotel. You can't give every scandal something gate. That's just cheap and lazy syntax. Just say yes. Something scandal instead of just calling it something gate. It is one of the
Pizzagate.
Yeah. That's not sitting around a hotel, is it? It's one of the laziest shorthands to describe scandals and one of the things I most loathe about English language headline writing. Something gate.
I don't like Well, not, and I've done it before, so I'm not speaking like I haven't done it. But the rise of blank,
okay.
The fall of blank.
The rise. Now, I don't particularly care for when things are described as the inside story, and then have unnamed sources. If it's an inside story, I need to know who the men are on the inside. And it does tend to be men on the inside. I'm also
great so movie.
When Keir Starmer became head of the Labour Party, he was described very often as having forensic analysis, and he was supposed to be a very detailed driven leader of the opposition, which also led to a lot of English and a lot of English media headlines being described as a forensic look at something else. I get very annoyed at things that are described as a deep dive and they're under 2,000 words. How can it be a deep dive if it's short? If it's a deep dive, you've got to give me a small book. Come on.
What is a small book to you, word count-wise?
5,000.
5,000? Damn.
Look, I have been told that a long read now is anything longer than 1,200 words, which, no, it's not. A long read is 2,000 to 3,000 in my mind. 2,000 to 3,000 upwards in my mind.
1,200 is a long read. Maybe in 2024.
In 2024, a long read is more than 1,200 words. Whereas when I was starting out, 1,000 words was just medium.
Yeah.
Well, that shows the internet's moving from a text.
I'm in writer mode right now. So, like, I'm working on an essay. I have the outline was 3,000 words, and I'm at like 8,000.
That's nice, man.
And I'm not done. So, it's a chapter. So I can imagine like 1,200. That's just like one thought.
That's it. 1,200 is a day's work for me now.
I don't know about that.
When I first started my career, I used to take a week to get a good 1,200 word piece out. And now I can do it in a day. But I've been doing this for a while. Anyway, Liverpool 2, Manchester United 2 at Old Trafford.
You were there?
I was there. It was my birthday. Okay. The stadium announcer wished me happy birthday at halftime. So 70,000 people all went, who? and it's, you know, this follows up Chelsea 4, Manchester United 3 at Stamford Bridge. Another game I was present for. Manchester United right now are chaos on the field. And I don't know what they're trying to coalesce off it. I don't think this Manchester United team is going to be playing Champions League football next season. But I think this draw will have now opened up the chance for one of Arsenal and Manchester City to win the Premier League. I think this is perhaps too valuable a point for Liverpool to have dropped. Two valuable points that Liverpool dropped that they shouldn't have dropped. Because I watched Manchester City beat Crystal Palace 4-2 and I went, they're winning every game between now and the end of the season. I can't see City drop any points in the Premier League anymore.
Oh, well. Sometimes it's hard to tell when you're done or when the next sentence is coming. No. So the game I felt was interesting. Liverpool just kind of have a thing where they can just get points. So I was always kind of confident in them getting a result. I hear you on the City point where they look good and maybe they won't lose and all that kind of stuff. Arsenal's the one that scares me, man.
Go on.
I think I've just gotten used to them like not winning, and it's been like it's made my spirit happy. If we're gonna, you know, do a callback, like I'm content with that. You probably more so than me, considering where you grew up and like the time in which you grew up.
I'll put it this way: Arsenal games against Manchester United and Arsenal mean almost as much to me as the Manchester derby. When the season starts, I go and I outline United versus Liverpool. I outline United versus City and I outline United v Arsenal. I grew up in London. A lot of my friends are Arsenal fans. And that's how that works.
Yeah.
So games against Arsenal make things particularly spicy. Also, when you consider other podcasts I do as well and the people I podcast with in those situations as well too. Now, Arsenal coming to Manchester United May 11th, penultimate game of the season. So after this draw against Liverpool and just before it, I had a lot of Arsenal fans say, thanks for the favour, Ten Hag. Don't worry about it. And I'm going to Arsenal fans, you're not scared about coming to Old Trafford too? And Arsenal fans are like, nah, we're cool. We'll beat you. And Jurgen Klopp, I was in the room. He was asked, are you going to be a Manchester United fan when Arsenal come to visit? And he went, yeah, probably, with a shrug. And then he said, but no disrespect, Arsenal are a very good team. And if they play like the way I know Arsenal can play, they'll win here no problem. He also said, I think we should have beaten United. Now, Liverpool, very, very good in both penalty areas, are probably ahead of schedule in this last title challenge. And yet they've not managed to beat Manchester United in three attempts this season. Two draws against United, and let's be real, against a bad and chaotic Manchester United team this season, that's got to burn Klopp. That's got to burn Liverpool fans, especially, you know, they put seven past them at Anfield last season. These are games that, if you're serious about winning the Premier League, Liverpool should be winning. Liverpool's record against the top six this season is not as impressive as it has been in previous seasons. Klopp was also asked by Miguel Delaney of The Independent about how he feels going into a title race where you don't necessarily have to get 99 points or 95 points plus to win the Premier League, and how it is. And Klopp seemed fairly relaxed about it, saying, look, you know, the City pool years, I'm paraphrasing here, the City pool years were incredible successes for both clubs, and it set a points tally that not everyone can get, including these two teams. And now what we're seeing is, you know, a bit more of the norm.
Mm. So I'm looking at Liverpool's schedule, and in the league, they play Palace, Fulham, Everton, West Ham, Spurs, Villa, Wolves. So they don't have any more of the big games, you'd say, against their two main rivals. But they do have a couple, maybe even I count four games where it's like, So Everton away is a Like, it's they'll win it, but there's still some...
It'll be fiery.
Yeah, there's a competitive element there.
Everton team. We should also mention right now we're talking Everton have been having an additional 2-point deduction.
Yes.
Due to TSR. So the relegation belt is now getting confusing. Andros Townsend, who used to play at Everton, is now at Luton Town, has said it's quite difficult being a Luton player because you just don't know how many points you need to get to stay up. And it's causing a lot of indecision.
Interesting. More is the answer.
Yeah, you don't know how many points you need to get. The simple answer to that is just win as many games as you can.
Yeah, however, more. We need more points.
When you're a team with the resources and finances of Luton, you kind of need to be able to predict which games are more winnable in your calendar than other ones. Especially when things are getting condensed. I think it's not eight, nine? Seven games. The relegation bout was getting particularly stretchy because we don't know how these deductions are going to apply, not just to Everton, but also to Nottingham Forest. The championship race is getting really, really interesting because Leicester City also might have PSR deductions. So we don't know if they're going to be in top two or if they might drop down into the playoffs.
So in four games in a row, they play Everton away, they play West Ham away, which conceivably they could lose. Like, it's not the easiest game.
So strange.
Yeah. And then you have Spurs and Villa, which are they're going to be competing for Champions League places. So their schedule is not the easiest, but it's maybe better than the others. So Liverpool are in a weird place, and they still have Europa League duties to worry about. So it's a weird one. I don't know quite where to place them within the context of the title race. You would think City are favorites, Arsenal are the better challengers, but Liverpool are there. So you can't discount them.
Mm-hmm. Goal difference now is also going to be a huge thing.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg,
This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons. This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I was gonna ask, what did you make of Arsenal and Brighton? So, and that's another game, Brighton away, that I guess has become one to worry about in some way, because Brighton are considered a decent footballing side at this point. That it's not just some easy game you go to the Amex and you win.
Brighton are quite statistically weird in that they are the whipping boys of the top half, if such a thing exists. They score in it. They very rarely keep a clean sheet. They very rarely fail to score. And so the fact that Arsenal took them apart with such authority shows why this Arsenal team, okay, if they don't win this Premier League title, they will probably win a Premier League title soon. I'm looking at this Arsenal team. You asked me about how I feel about the Arsenal rivalry. I made peace with the fact Arsenal are going to win the Premier League in like February last year. I genuinely thought they were going to win last season's title, and then the Southampton draw happened and I was like, oh. And the Brighton was up and I went, oh. So Saliba's injury, I think, was the thing that swung that. Because Rob Holden, bless him, is not perhaps not at the required level for a team that wants to win a Premier League when Manchester City are around. I think Declan Rice is a fantastic player. And I think if they can get in further players, they will win at least one Premier League title before the next World Cup. Now, can they win this one? The way they control possession and they can just smother teams in the final third, that's how you win Premier League games now, right? That's the apex of this style of football that Pep Guardiola and other managers who have been successful in England and in the Champions League seem to want to play. However, I watched that City Crystal Palace game. And I saw Kevin De Bruyne and he was superb. And then they left Phil Foden on the bench. And then I saw the Champions League game and I saw Phil Foden come off the bench. And I got they're warming up. April does something to Manchester City and they just flick a switch and it just becomes ridiculous. Did you watch the Champions League game against Real Madrid?
I did.
What did you think?
I think what's the most interesting part to me was the analysis that people had of the game where... It's biased, at least the analysis that I see is biased against City and biased more so against Pep Guardiola. So people, when I say people, I mean the timeline. They were, the analysis was like, Vinicius and Rodrigo were so wasteful. Like they should have scored 2, 3, 4 more goals. And I'm thinking like, okay, you realistically expect or would request that Manchester City concede 5, 6, 7 goals in a game? That's ridiculous. You should be happy that you got 3, which then leads me to think the more pressing issue is, how do you stop City getting the 3 goals that they got? Is that more pressure in midfield to where you're closing down shooters like Foden, Guardiola? Is that the goalkeeper being a bit more switched on so you don't concede a goal like you did in the first one, in the first 2-3 minutes, I think, with Silva? Like, those are mistakes that Madrid made that I think can be corrected with more attention, energy, effort. Mm-hmm. Asking Vinicius and Rodrigo, we need you to get a brace apiece so we can score 7. That's a bit unrealistic to me when you already got 3. Like, 3 goals against Manchester City is good. The problem is you just conceded 3, one of which you couldn't do anything about with Foden. It was just a great strike. But the other two were preventable.
I don't think you can prevent the Guardiola goal.
I think if Courtois was in goal, he saves it. But that's because Courtois is like
a
freak.
Different human being, you know?
I know, but that's kind of the point. Nobody's saving Foden's. But... Yep.
But
that's also a case of the ball's rolled to his left foot and there's nobody there to close the space. And then he's all one for whatever reason. So
do you want a hot take?
Go for it.
What Pep Guardiola is doing to Phil Foden was what he originally planned to do to Mario Götze.
I think
this Phil Foden development, and I mean, when we first started doing Talking Tactics, Phil Foden was being talked up as a successor to David Silva. He was meant to be the, you know, the English player with the pauser, and he doesn't quite have that pauser. He's more of a final third player now, and more of someone who has the freedom to do solutions in the final third, and is coming to central areas after coming playing on the wing, and it's brilliant. It's also getting peak Mario Götze level, and perhaps even like a certain other attacking player Pep Guardiola used to play with. I'm not saying it's going to be that good, but
yeah. Stop it. Now, I will say the comparison with Götze, Foden is way more of a dynamic athlete. Like his bursts, his pace, his ability to take space when space is there, I think is better than Götze. And then Götze obviously had his medical issues or whatever. So he's dealing with a better athlete. Whether or not he's dealing with a better technician is its own thing. But it's an interesting comparison. The other comparison, I will not even dignify with further commentary.
Just for the boys. That's just for
us. No. You can
put a that's just for the boys.
You didn't say anybody. I'm just, I think I know who you're talking about. I think they're also left footed, but you know, So what did you make of Haaland? So I've seen Haaland discourse going around that he was relatively quiet, but I would say that his just being there creates the space for someone like Foden to play in, or someone like Silva or whoever it is.
It's a bit of both, right? This is who Haaland is. He is a remarkable physical prospect on the ground, in the air, left-footed. But in big games, or games that are either finals or games that could be described as finals, he is not going to do too much because he punctuates other moves, right? I think he got 20 touches of the ball against Real Madrid. And
In big
games, strikers don't touch the ball as much because they get double teamed and marked. So therefore, you need to find ways to influence the game in other ways. Haaland, for reasons, is not influential off the ball in the same way a Harry Kane is, or in the same way that a younger Robert Lewandowski is. Can he do that? I think Pep Guardiola will want him to do that eventually. You know, Roy Keane said he was played like a League Two player. this was after he said his general play was like a League Two player after the Arsenal game, because again he had limited touches and he didn't find a way to influence the game. Rafael van der Vaart said something weird and hatery after this draw with Real Madrid. Now I think the big thing for former professional football players when they bring up Haaland's general play deficiencies, and I put that in air quotes, is for a man of Haaland's size and strength, his hold-up play should be better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I keep hearing from a lot of former pros when they talk about him. They're saying, for a guy this big and this tall, he should be backing down into centre-backs and just holding the ball up way better than the way he wants to. And now I'm not sure if that is a correct diagnosis of the way Haaland plays football. Because, yeah, okay, he's really tall and he's really strong, but also he's way more dangerous running in behind. Now, do you take a player who is top 1% aisle running in behind and say, learn back to goal game and become a better all-round player? Or do you just build your team around that top 1% aisle running in behind and just enjoy the profits? This is the interesting thing about him being at Manchester City, in that he will probably have to develop his all-round game, whereas if he was at a team like Dortmund or Manchester United or Juventus, they're probably just gone, just running behind, we'll figure it out. And I think this Haaland situation will be... Haaland is worse when De Bruyne is not in the team, because him and De Bruyne have a chemistry and a connection that you can see at the moment the Brady gets the ball, Haaland starts running. Whereas the more Foden comes into the team and the great influence Foden's having in the final third, the less influence Haaland's having because Foden wants to take more touches.
Mm. Yeah, I think the analysis on Haaland is kind of regressive in some ways, where because you're 6'4", we expect you to play like someone who's 6'4", meaning, or just it could probably be explained by the people who are the age to give analysis now played in the 90s and the 2000s when someone who was that big played a particular way. I think even Lukaku kind of got that treatment where, you know, we expect you because you're 6'3" and a physical presence, we expect you to have back to goal game and you should be playing like Didier Drogba. But he was like, no. Like, that's not how I play. I want to get in behind, play on the last man. It's like, well, you're too big to do that. It says who? Just the people who are giving the analysis. So Haaland is very fast. And I think his best quality outside of finishing is his movement. So to make him kind of a static, bring everybody into play as if, as you say, like a Harry Kane or something like that, that's not going to be his game until the pace goes. And then he's going to have to develop that. So maybe that's something that he needs to build slowly. But like, it is hard to watch. I'll say that when he tries to play that way, he's better than he was like at Dortmund, I would say. So, you know, playing with Pep has its perks and its benefits in terms of the coaching that's going on. But yeah, it's not nice. Like he can easily go invisible. And I think, I wonder, you'd have to ask him, because he has the bravado and the arrogance of somebody that wouldn't admit to this. But I wonder if sometimes if he hides a bit, I'd have to watch him more to figure out, like, is he taking the spaces to receive the ball? Mm-hmm. Or is he a bit, I'll gamble that maybe somebody will pass it to me instead of doing the guarantee thing by going to get a touch and bring in play and bringing his teammates into the game. I'd have to watch him a bit more closely, but it's something to look for.
Tremendous football player with the potential to be a not one of the all timers, or up there in the generation all the time, right? And at this point in time, and I say this point in time as in these last couple of weeks, he is performing at a sub Ibrahimovic rate. You know, I think the big thing for Haaland is he going to be remembered more fondly than Ibra? And this is because they're both really poor and from Canada.
I can tell you that no already.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a Champions League and Ibra doesn't.
But we're
talking about Haaland already, and the guy's got he's got I think it's 32 goals in 38 games this season.
Something I thought ridiculous. It was 30 and 37.
There you go. He's got a ridiculous goal tally. And yet, if you ask me, when was the last time there was a Haaland game, I'd scratch my head. Which is that very interesting thing about a player who can be influential in taking but also take so few touches comparative to everyone else.
That's why the Ibra comparison, I don't think, works.
Okay.
Because Ibrahimovic had the touch of somebody who was like 5'6". But he was 6'3". It was unnatural in the way that he was able to control the football at that size. Mm-hmm. It just looked, I don't think we've seen a man that big in that position with that kind of technique and skill. I don't know.
Got you.
So, but Haaland is not that. Ibra played like he got a late growth spurt.
Yes.
If that makes it, but Haaland plays like he's been big his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's kind of the Lukaku problem as well, that he's just been bigger than everybody his whole life and faster. So he never really needed to develop the technique because I'll just beat you to the place. What else could we go? Say again?
Arsenal Bayern.
I even forgot what happened. It's difficult to watch multiple games at once. I was more focused on Madrid. So
I watched Arsenal Bayern. So okay. This was... I think honestly, this will be a result that Arsenal will rue a little bit.
It was at the Emirates, yeah.
At the Emirates, no away fans technically. I spotted quite a few German fans in the crowd watching on TV. So 60,000, it was 60,000 Arsenal fans all in the Emirates packed together. And they, you know, Leroy Sané. This was a very good game for Leroy Sané. He's had a tendency to blow hot and cold this season, but he was very, very good. He was a star player, in my opinion, for Bayern. First half, okay, interesting. Arsenal got down because of Sané's work. And then they switch on, right? Mm. Just two brilliant goals. Gabriel Jesus' assist for Trossard's goal was fantastic. And when Sané went off, I think in the 65th minute, just past the hour mark, and for Kingsley Coman, and you could really see Bayern lost the step. So Gnabry also had to come off as well. And then, you know, when you take Bayern's thrilling wing play away from them, you can see the more prosaic central midfield. Leon Goretzka, why have I mispronounced his name?
Goretzka.
Thank you. Leon Goretzka is a really, really weird player to me in that he's physically top 1% of central midfielders I see in European football. Technically, I'd say he's top 30%. And then football IQ, I don't know. Sometimes he does things that are incredibly intelligent as a defensive, you know, as a defensively minded box-to-box player. And then it comes to, you know, making the pass and breaking the lines. I'm going, what'd you do that for?
You ever watched, just not in relation to Goretzka. You ever watched footballers and just be like, he's just dumb. You don't have to answer. You don't have to answer. But like, sometimes I'm watching the game and I'm just like, if you just might be silly. Like, I don't know how better to say it. But some guys I watch, even Sané sometimes, even though he has like brilliant moments, I'm just like, sometimes you're just dumb.
I think a very good example of this. Same but for
hold on, just one quick caveat. I'm not in the body of the person that has the ball at their feet. Mm. I'm the person that's observing all 22 people. I can sometimes see spaces they can't based on the TV. Yep. So it's like, well, why aren't you doing that? Well, it's like, Daniel, you're not dribbling. You're not living this moment right now. But it's like, how didn't you see what I saw? Yeah. Sometimes, but that's where I go when I think he just might be silly.
There are times where people, you know, especially with wingers, I'm like, don't make that pass. I'll say this watching highlights. Very often I'm watching the highlights of other games when I'm in the press room at Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. So they'll go, this is what's going on in other games. And then I'll see a pass. I'm like, don't do that. And then a former Manchester United player will turn around and go, he hasn't got eyes in the back of his head. What are you on about? I'm like, oh, okay. I'll say, they should do that. And they go, you don't understand how acceleration works. You can't just immediately slow down from that position. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And this is something I've gained a greater appreciation for as I watch more football with people who've played it at the highest level. But I do agree, there are times where you watch a football player and you go, you're just a bit silly. Or you're prone to doing silly things at very, very important moments. And yeah, a great example of this in European football right now is Darwin Nunez, who, again, physically, top 1%. Technical, top 30%. Intelligence, huh? I love him. I think he's box office. The guy is averaging 50 shots per game. And you're just going, oh man, if you could just tweak these two or three things about your play, you'd be one of the best players on the planet. But that's the balance and variety of football.
Do you know? Okay.
Let's steer back into Arsenal. Arsenal 2-1 up.
Detour.
Arsenal 2-1 up. Bayern Munich get a penalty. Harry Kane, great penalty run up. He started it. He said he watched the Bayern Munich team looked at all of Raya's penalties in the game against Porto. And they said that Raya is really aggressive because he wants to leap towards the corners. So you have to slow down your run if you want to play your penalty, which I thought was interesting. So it's 2-2. The game is being played at high level. I mean, I'm watching the Arsenal game and also
2-1. It would have been 2-1 at that point.
It would have been 2-1. So when the scores are 2-2, I'm seeing reports also from the Real Madrid Man City game, and you're going, this is it. This is the Champions League, how it's supposed to be. These are some of the best teams on the planet playing at high level, and it's really annoying. It takes until early April to get to this stage. No, the Swiss format is a bad idea. Now, final minutes of the game, Saka collides with Manuel Neuer, and in real time, I'm going, how is that not a penalty? And I watch it slow down, and I'm going, ooh, Saka's dangled his leg here. He's gone looking for that. I think he went looking for that, thinking Manuel Neuer was going to hit him at full speed. And that's why he wouldn't be able to shape his body to go around him and shoot. But Neuer, cleverly, you know, this is why Manuel Neuer is still one of the best goalkeepers in the world. He takes an extra beat as he's approaching Saka. And then that's why his being Saka's trailing leg looks even more egregious and why the penalty isn't given. Really, really good refereeing performance there.
Wait a minute. You didn't think the Raya to Gabriel, touched it?
I was about to get that. I think the Raya to Gabriel bit right and Gabriel holding it, one, that's an example of Gabriel being a bit silly. And two, I think that's the referee applying common sense. Think about how many times we've talked on this podcast about how referees make decisions that are correct to the rules but aren't right sitting with our spirit. And I think the referee's seen that and gone, you know what? This hasn't really given it a noticeable advantage here. I can let this one slide. And he explained this to Thomas Tuchel. Thomas Tuchel was furious about this and saying the letter of the law should be applied. But in a game where Saka doesn't get a penalty in the last minute, I'm okay with Gabriel not giving away a penalty for that quite silly handling of the ball.
So you do agree with spirit of the law over letter of the law sometimes?
Just not
in rat beef.
The spirit of rat beef, you should be going for his neck.
Sometimes rules have to be amended depending on what's going on, is the point.
All right.
But no, I disagree with you in this point. I think that should have been a penalty. Or an indirect free kick. Happened to indirect free kicks?
They've largely gone away. And this, if indirect free kicks existed, they should have.
I love indirect free kicks. You know the highlight, the one of Batistuta?
Yep.
He just rifles them. Like, I love that. Like, we need to bring that back. Even the soccer one. Maybe it's not a penalty, but why can't that be a foul inside the box? Free kick.
Like, I think this is...
I think penalties have become too black and white. Yes. Why isn't there more gray area to where the referee can decide not quite a penalty, but there was a foul there. Free kick. But it has to be a penalty because of whatever reason. But yeah, like
the threshold for what is and isn't a penalty is too low for how good a goal scoping opportunity a penalty is.
Exactly.
And this was less of a problem when teams weren't so utterly dominant in the final third against smaller opponents. This was less of a problem where goalkeepers were allowed to jump off their line during penalty run-ups. This was less of a problem when football players were less talented at taking penalties. But this season, in the Premier League alone, I did a piece on this last Friday, in the Premier League alone, the penalty conversion rate is way higher than it's ever been. And
it used to be 80 in the 80s, yeah? Is it like 90s now?
It's getting higher and higher. And a key reason behind that is there are more left-footed penalty takers. There are more left-footed penalty takers in the Premier League than ever before. Like in many sports, left-footers at a high level are more prolific than right footers at another level, because just facing someone who's left-handed makes your brain have to rewire everything.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. We should bring back indirect free kicks. We should have if you want to keep the threshold for penalties the way it is, which I'm okay, mostly okay with it. I can live with it. Then we should introduce indirect free kicks. Reintroduce indirect free kicks. All right, that's that. We got 5 minutes before PSV Eindhoven play Borussia Dortmund and Paris Saint-Germain play Barcelona. And I think we've gone through the topics. So let's wrap this up. Take us home.
I was going to ask you one last thing about Liverpool. So I think we said last week or the week before that Amarim has been linked or was one of the candidates. And you said you needed to watch more of Sporting Club de Portugal. of Sporting.
Yep.
So I think I'll put a pin in that one. But it's news that's on the radar that Liverpool might have their guy. So that's there. And then I was going to add to your left-footed penalty point with Cole Palmer, who seems very good from the penalty spot, which was going to lead me to, do you think Trae Young has like a copyright infringement that he can do? Do you remember when we were kids, and I don't know if you did this, if this was a UK thing, but somebody would do something like copyright, that's my copyright, or trademark. People would put copyright trademark.
That don't reach the UK.
So Trae Young with the ice cold celebration, ice cold or ice tray, I guess is what is his nickname. That's copyright. That's copyright. But you know, basketball isms translating across the pond. But yes. Any last points, or you were going to say something?
PSG versus Barcelona. Who's winning tonight?
Something tells me Barca win the tie.
Okay, but
I don't know who wins today.
Okay.
Put it that way. And PSV Atletico, I think, is the tie, or Dortmund?
No, PSV have been knocked out. I don't know why I keep seeing PSV versus Dortmund. I'm really sorry. It's Dortmund versus Atletico. Sorry, I've said this all day, not realizing Dortmund already knocked out PSV. To listeners that have got this far, going, why does he keep saying PSV, Dortmund versus PSV?
It's Dortmund versus Atletico. Because I remember seeing, I've been seeing Simeone all day. So I was anyway.
Sorry, I said like four times on this podcast, okay, making that mistake. Yeah. Who's winning between Atletico and Dortmund?
Atletico is a smart play. So that's where I'll go. I'll go with Atletico.
I'm predicting wins for PSG and Atletico.
That's what's messing you up, probably, is PSG, PSV. Maybe you're transposing it in your brain.
It's been a very long week, and things look to be a very long weekend for me as well.
Anyway, Carl, thank you for doing this. Where can people follow you and get your stuff?
You can find my work over on The Athletic, where I cover Manchester United and wider European football. The next big piece I've got going is on why April 13th is of particular relevance to Erik ten Hag's time in charge of Manchester United.
Interesting. All right. I'm at Daniel to look. You can follow the podcast at Talking Tactics on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow the Patreon page where you can get what we think about Kendrick and J. Cole. You guys know what to do. Links are in the description. Talking Tactics podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
But always football.
Indeed. We will see you guys next week. Peace.
Peace. Take care. Sports Social Podcast Network.